we're taking an endpoint with our clients now, meaning you're not getting in when the land's there and it's just starting to get built. The properties that, as you know, your client buying from us now, they're either done or within 90 days of completion.
Welcome to the Rent to Retirement Podcast, your resource for passive real estate investing and retirement strategies. If you're new to real estate or planning your financial future, you're in the right place. Join us at renttoretirement.com to find your path to financial freedom and an easy, carefree retirement. Enjoy the show.
Hey, Rent to Retirees, it's Adam Schrader here with another episode, joined as usual by Zach Lumaster, the founder and CEO of Rent to Retirement. And today we are going to talk about everyone's favorite state. And a lot of times when I say things like everyone's favorite, it's being sarcastic and talking about Texas. But today it's actually everyone's favorite state to invest in, and that is Florida. And we are joined by Jim, one of our top providers there in Florida. Jim, thanks for joining us to talk about this venture today.
Thanks, Adam. Good to be here.
Yeah, so build to rent is something we've talked about a bit on the show that we love. It's one of the business models and investing models that is just fantastic for investors all around. You guys are building, I think, literally all over Florida. And tell us a little bit about the build to rent model in Florida and why. I mean, in my opinion, it's pretty much the only way to buy a house in Florida right now, but why it is a good choice specifically in Florida.
Well, you know, Adam, you and I have known each other for a number of years now. If you remember years back, I used to do bulk foreclosures. I'd find old houses that were in foreclosure, fix them up and rent them. And that can be a very solid model. Absolutely. But the thing that I liked about build to rent, which we kind of fell backwards into 10 years ago, was I owning a lot of properties had something that we call the 3-year curse. Now, I own a lot of older properties. But it seemed that I just, after 3 years, even if I did, you know, new roof, heating, cooling, plumbing, kitchens, baths, My maintenance repairs is higher. And I didn't like that. I mean, some people don't mind that, and that can be great, but I wanted something with for more longevity. I mean, as you guys say, rent to retire. I'm looking now at my kids and their kids' kids with my portfolio. So I want properties that really have solidarity and long-term fundamentals. And the new construction, you know, now doing a few thousand foreclosure renovations compared to a few thousand new construction, it just seemed like a lot of the littler headaches went away. And that first 5 years of home ownership is so important as we're growing, you know, our portfolio to that next wave of the cycle where rents have gone up, values continue to go up. You guys have all experienced that. We all have on this call, and it's really nice. And the new construction, I felt, got us there easier. There's less maintenance and repairs, less tenant turnover. We're able to build in better areas with stronger fundamentals of growth. And that's what we're all looking for. So putting together several portfolios of older homes versus the new construction, both can work. They can both get you there. But I felt like the new construction really helped our clients buy back their time and spend time doing the things they really wanted to do instead of being involved with the properties.
Yeah. And I found like whenever the recent hurricanes that have come through and hit the, you know, Southwest Florida coast. I mean, if you heard about all the unfortunate devastation that happened, I don't think I heard about a single one that was to a new build. It was existing homes that, sorry if you own those, that was rough.
I want to talk on that for a second, Adam, because that's such a big conversation here. And we all remember when our parents used to say, put on your seatbelt when you go out driving, put on your seatbelt. And yeah. And then you got in that first, you know, fender bender and you're like, man, I'm really glad I had my seatbelt on. Right. Well, that's what new construction was for us last year at Hurricane Ian. I mean, Hurricane Ian, you know, building in Southwest Florida with Hurricane Category 4 coming there, which has not happened in many, many years. It put us to the test. And, you know, out of 278 projects we had going on down there, we had four projects, just four, that required insurance claims. That means there was more than $5,000 worth of damage. But here's something interesting. Those four properties, well, they were in the beginning stage. It was just the freestanding walls. We hadn't had time to tie the roof on, which gives it the strength and integrity. So the walls fell down. But we had zero flooding. See, with new construction, after 2004, when Hurricane Charley hit Punta Gorda, which we build in now, and the eye of the storm went over. It's an interesting story on that, of this last hurricane. They changed the rules. Instead of being able to build at 2 feet above sea level, you got to pull in a lot of dirt, which is a pain in the rump, but it's like our seatbelt. And we have to build it 13, 14 feet above sea level. That makes a huge difference. Plus the structural integrity they require for any property built 2004 or newer in Florida, total game changer. So when you combine those two things, it really helps you with facing a storm like we did and saw such good results. You know what else it helps with, which is good for all of us on our performance, is the insurance costs. So like, I know you and I have joked, Adam, when people come to me and say, well, I heard insurance in Florida is expensive. I go, well, which property though? Because if it's a 1952 built at 2 feet above sea level to different structural integrity, that's going to cost you more. A new construction, they give you a discount because their analysts say the odds of the problems happening on this property are much lower. It's a lower premium.
Jim, this is great stuff. I think this is, I mean, this is so relevant because Florida is our, it's our top market. I mean, it's, if people can, a newer construction is a little bit more expensive, and we'll talk about just briefly the pros and cons. I think I want to touch on a lot of what you mentioned, but when we look at, when we talk about Florida, investing in Florida, those are always the buzzwords that come up, right? It's hurricanes and flooding. And it's people that live in different parts of the country that are concerned about those things. And they really just need to be educated. And those questions need to be addressed. So generally speaking, I think you try to avoid flood zones to begin with, plus the building standards, like you mentioned, you're building at more elevation now. Which the standards have just changed. The block, these are concrete block construction. These are not stick built houses, and they're meant to withstand 150 mile per hour plus winds. Same thing, you know. And then we can go back, and we have a specific case study now with a recent, you know, Category 4 hurricane that came through Southwest Florida to say, well, this, you know, because people ask about hurricanes, it's like, well, this just happened, and look how these houses withstood this. Same thing with us. We had many, many projects between ourselves and our investors going on in Southwest Florida, like specifically Cape Coral area. Mm-hmm. And we only had two properties that needed an insurance claim. Those just so happened to be my personal properties. That same thing, that they were just
luck of the draw right there, I guess.
Yeah. But these were actually, and those were coastal. They were golf access lots that I was building for short-term rental. And they, same thing, they had the walls like up, and it wasn't even the walls fell completely down. It was just like portions of them, you know, and it was just enough to require an insurance claim, but everyone else did completely fine. Maybe there was a little bit of roof shingles, but I mean, houses are built per code to withstand these things. So, I mean, that should squash a lot of concerns that people have. When we look at build to rent specifically, I mean, I think the conversations that we have with people is like, okay, well, why? Because we really transitioned our business a lot because of the things that you said, to focus specifically on new construction, because we are true believers that, yeah, new construction is a better way to go. And you're also usually in a better market. I mean, builders are building in these areas for a reason. That's because you're in the path of progress and there's a housing demand in these areas. Otherwise, you wouldn't be building in these areas, right? I mean, it would make no sense. And so long term, we generally see better appreciation, both in rents and prices, better quality tenants, longer term tenants with less vacancy and less turnover costs, less maintenance costs overall in general, right? Less CapEx because you have builder warranties. And we'll talk about that to begin with, but also just maintenance is less over time. The challenges, I think, with new construction is that they're a little bit higher price points. And so it is a little bit more of a barrier to entry. Not everyone can afford them. And so maybe a Midwest $158,000 house might be the starting point for you. But eventually the goal is like, okay, use your equity, trade up and own new construction in some of these growth areas if you can. I want to talk about Florida though specifically. And you guys build a lot in different parts of Florida, but like, and I know you're expanding out to other areas in the South and Southeast where there's demand as well. But I mean, why, let's talk about, can you go through the locations that you're building in, and maybe just, let's do just a brief summary of those and kind of like, explain why you're building in those locations.
Yeah. So we started to build to rent in Northeast Florida in Jacksonville, because that's where my building partner, Chris, and I did bulk foreclosures. We knew the market, we knew the demand, we knew it really well. So it started there. But then we grew from Jacksonville down to Palm Coast, out to Ocala, out to Citrus Springs, Inverness, and then into seven markets down in the greater Fort Myers area. That's Southwest Florida, you know, reaching, you know, where Adam's talking about, you know, out east of there, and then just that whole area we kind of blanket. And the reason we're in all those areas, and we can go through each one, but we have five factors that we look for, Zach, before we go into any market. We look for population growth. We look for economic growth. Is there jobs there? When there's more jobs coming and better pay coming, you know, we know they can pay rents. We look for, this is the key one, and I know you guys hammer this home, affordability. If you have a bad affordability index, it really throws the fundamentals out of whack, because you want an affordability index just means the average median household income can afford the average house in the area. And the score, the affordability index score in all of our markets is very strong. So that's really important. We want to have a good affordability index. And I can break down some comparison numbers that you might find interesting. And then desirability. Is there something drawing people to the area? You know, warm weather, climate. These are things that people like. And then healthy supply and demand. You know, like before the pandemic, you know, even started, before the lockdowns even started, you know, we got a report from the municipality down in Fort Myers. And they were 3 years behind on needed rental inventory then. And then after that, Fort Myers became the number one fastest growing area in the nation, that whole greater area. And so that's the kind of wind we want at our back. I mean, it sounds simplistic, but you don't want to be a builder building in an area where there's an oversupply. You want to go where there's an undersupply. So that's kind of what we look for in all of our areas.
So one of the things that people have come to me about whenever it comes to Florida, because Florida is a state where there are some significant cities in terms of population, but there's also a whole lot of cities that are, you know, 20,000, 30,000, that if you're from a major city, you can be like, well, that town's really small. You know, that's too small to support, you know, a real rental market. And tell us a little bit about Florida and why those types of areas can actually support these properties that you're building.
Well, let's talk about Ocala. Ocala is a perfect example. So it's you know, you can be there for about an hour and 40 minutes from Jacksonville, about an hour and 10 minutes from Orlando. It's about 75 miles north of Tampa. When I first found out about Ocala, truth be told, about 10 years ago, I remember going, Ocala, you know, doesn't that have like 5,000 people or something? You know, I was that kind of, you know, the thick-headed guy.
More horses than people, right?
Yeah. And here's what I can tell you. The numbers don't lie. So right now in Ocala, that's not only been, we expect that to be one of our flatter markets. It's had one of the best appreciations. It has one of the best median price areas. Right now, rental demand, we're filling on average in Ocala 16 days on market. It's our lowest time to fill a rental in all of our markets. So we are always looking at the population influx. In areas like that, especially, you know, through the lockdowns, people wanted less density. It changed the mindset of where a lot of people wanted to live. They wanted more space, you know, a less dense area, and just kind of a simple lifestyle. In an area like Ocala supplies that. Not only that, it's got its own economy there, and just north is Gainesville, and just south is the Villages, which is the second largest retirement community in the nation and growing. So it's a nice little bedroom community as well, where people want an affordable lifestyle that they can really enjoy.
I think this has the right combination of getting into an area that you will have rental demand, you'll have resale demand, and that you'll have appreciation, have growth. Because at the end of the day, if you can buy a house that still has positive cash flow, because in most parts of the country, that's the challenge with new construction, is it's so expensive that like the numbers don't make sense unless you're putting, you know, 50% down or whatever. You can't be positive cash flow. So I think, you know, we're building in these, you guys specifically work in the build to rent space. So you have the investor in mind when you're evaluating these areas, because you guys are investors yourselves and this is your business model. And so you're thinking about all these things. It's not just about the population growth and, like, you know, things like that. You're thinking about it from an investor mind where it's like, hey, we got to have the numbers make sense. So we got to your point about the affordability index, you got to make sure that the rents are there to actually be able to cash flow, which they still are. You can still have positive cash flow with even a 20% down traditional loan. With today's interest rates. And there's a lot of different creative options we can do as well. We work with a lender that you can put less than 20% down. This is an investor-based loan. We've talked about that on other podcasts. So we'll provide links to those. But, you know, if you're looking to grow your portfolio and have, you know, and especially from a tax play, there's a lot of creative things to do and look at. But specifically, you can buy new construction in most parts of Florida where you can still have positive cash flow, you still have strong appreciation. And so I kind of refer to it as having your cake and eating it too. You know, it may not be great cash flow year one, don't expect a 20% cash on cash return. However, don't just look at year one either, right? Like if you're in an area where rents go up 5% per year, and I'd like to hear maybe some stats and metrics from you from what you're seeing. Jim, you talked about your leasing time of average, you know, 16 days in leasing around Ocala area, but I'd be curious to hear even like today's market, what we're looking at for appreciation and rental growth and things like this. But if you think about this, if you had a 5% rental increase, which most areas in Florida, we see much higher than a 5% rental growth year after year. That's not just a 5% increase in your return on investment, right? There's an exponential factor there because you use your down payment once, your mortgage payment stays the same, and then the next year your rents go up 5%. That could equate to, you know, whatever the numbers are, 16, 17% return on investment after just 1 year. So I want to encourage people, look at beyond just year one. And there's been a lot of challenges with construction. We both dealt with it with timing and supply. So we'll get into that. But I mean, do you have any just metrics or stats kind of off the cuff in general that you're kind of seeing in today's market right now, not looking back? I mean, of course, over the past 3 or 4 years, it's been crazy. But like, what are we looking at today for things like average appreciation, rental growth, and occupancy timelines? How long are people staying in houses? Things like this.
So we're averaging a little over 2 years for stay time in our new construction properties. When it looks at overall growth for our markets, for our performance, which, you know, I'm sure a lot of people listening to this have seen, we try to baseline it lower than the averages. So I think we do rental growth at 5% and appreciation at 4% on our performance. Now, right now, Florida, again, take out the craziness of the last few years, you know, when rents went up 27% in a year, or, you know, and values went up. Florida averages right now, and the averages right now for our new lease ups, you know, when a person extends their lease, we're getting about 9.2% increase on average for those new rents. So the rents are still going up. We do our performance at half of that. Values right now, I think we're at about 8.7% value growth. On the average year right now, we do it again, about half of that. So that's a steady incremental thing I like to see, because when it starts to get too crazy, we can't really keep up with it. But again, we're looking long-term. We can continue to work with that from the numbers that I'm seeing. So that's about the steadiness of what I'm seeing in general for our markets.
So talk a little bit about the markets, because, you know, I've gotten some questions from people because right now the main ones that we're seeing, the big ones you have completed, like you've got a duplex in Inglewood, duplexes in like the Palm Coast. We talked about Ocala a little bit, but those aren't the markets you've heard about on the news. So can you tell us anything about the, you know, the markets that y'all are serving right now that people may not have heard much about, especially like you mentioned earlier, Inverness? The first time I saw that y'all had a building in Inverness, my first thought was that doesn't even sound like a real place. You know, how do I say this word? And had to go look it up. So tell us a little bit about the areas that y'all are currently building in.
Yeah. You know, Adam, I think one of the key things here you just uncovered is sometimes, and I'm sure you guys have experienced, the biggest city names that are talked about on the news aren't where you want to be anyway. You know, we don't right now build in Orlando. We don't right now, you don't do anything in Miami. We don't do anything right in Tampa. Because as you were talking about, Zach, the fundamentals just don't make sense. We want to go where the fundamentals make sense, not where it's well known. And so these second tier markets, they're called, have strong fundamentals, strong economies, desired growth. That affordability is there. So people are moving there at a higher percentage than some of these bigger known areas. And that's what we focus on. You know, and there'll be a range, you know, Palm Coast, beautiful coastal market. I know you guys have visited there before. You know, I got engaged there. It's the closest market to my personal home. That's going to be a higher buy-in, but we're expecting higher growth patterns there equity wise, because it is a coastal community. It does have a lot of higher end amenities and lifestyle to it, opposed to Ocala, which is more of an affordable inland market. So depending on where you want to go, that's one thing. Jacksonville's always been our hub. Jacksonville is a very interesting city. When I left the West Coast many, many years ago, and came here to start investing in Florida. Jacksonville was the most affordable coastal city by far in the entire United States in 2005. And if you guys remember, in 2005, nothing was affordable, especially coastal. Those two words didn't go together. So Jacksonville is such a diverse economy that it's more of that, again, second tier market. You know, we're still looking at median prices in Jacksonville, you know, right around $297,000. I mean, that's still very affordable when you look at, like, we've had a lot of investors with you guys come from Salt Lake City. Salt Lake City is twice the amount for their median values. Their rents are the same and their average family household incomes are the same. That tells you about healthy fundamentals. But then with Palm Coast and areas of Southwest Florida, like Fort Myers, you're going to have more expensive things. Parts of Englewood might be a little more expensive because the location is so key to a coastal community, might be there. But Lehigh Acres, which is a little more inland, well, that's going to get you a little better buy for the buck, depending on what you're wanting. So we're always trying to stay within those five things, Adam: population growth, economic growth, good affordability, healthy supply and demand, and something desirable drawing them to the area. But there'll be a range between, like, you know, Calgary to a Fort Myers market. When you're going into the number one fastest growing in the nation, like Fort Myers, it's going to be more expensive to buy into. But again, the rents are going to be higher as well.
Yeah. Sometimes we talk about, Adam and I refer to the lottery ticket property, which is essentially where you're just investing in a property based on, you know, cash flow fundamentals, with not the anticipation of things crazy, you know, crazy appreciation or anything like this. But it just, it so happens to work out that way over time because that area, like, really took off on in development. And it only takes, you know, one or two lottery ticket properties to really change your financial scenario. And you can only position yourself to own lottery ticket properties and, like, benefit from those by investing and having a diverse portfolio. But we always see those in secondary markets that become primary markets over time. And then sometimes that takes 10 years or whatever, but you can get into a secondary market, I think, where it is in the path of progress and you have strong cash flow you know, you keep the house rented year after year, but then it could really, I mean, as the population really takes off, I mean, then you get dramatic appreciation in that. Jim, let's talk a little bit about the construction industry as a whole and what we're seeing right now. We have a lot of investors. I mean, there was, I would say, about 3 years ago, 2 to 3 years ago, we were real heavy working with builders doing, like, development and ground up construction, where the investor would come in, they buy the land, they take out the construction financing. We had a handful of different builders that we worked with. They could hire on to build the project. A lot of those projects are still in construction right now because it's just crazy how long things have going. Some of those, you know, may be issues with the builders themselves. Some of those are certainly permitting things, hurricanes slow things down, weather, you know, supply chain and labor. Like, this is something we're all having to deal with. And now our model's completely shifted, where we're recommending that we, you know, we let the builders build the houses and we put them under contract when they're either done or close to being done. And I think that's just, even though you may not have this equity entrance point that you were kind of gambling for initially, and a lot of people did quite well, like the, you know, people that finished those projects. But tell us from a builder perspective, like, how the construction industry has developed and evolved over the past 2 to 3 years, specifically in Florida. What are some challenges you're still facing and maybe some changes you've experienced internally with your guys' business model?
Yeah, it's a great question. Look, the pandemic was a weird time. And I think that, you know, of course, me being a builder, I'm telling you how to get a haircut from the barber, right? But as a builder, I can tell you, you go off of what has been the norm. So we had been building for a number of years and our average build time was 6 to 8 months. All of a sudden, this thing happened where none of us have ever seen in our lifetime. And all of a sudden, that build time more than doubled because permits weren't getting approved. Supplies weren't available. It was an absolute screwy time, which, to be honest, I'm glad to see it's over. Here's why I can say that it's over. Material prices, and you can mark my words, they'll never go back to what they were, you know, pre-COVID. They're just not going to go. However, they have come down some, which is great. You know, it's kind of that ricochet where it goes up and then it's settled. We're seeing that settling and the availability has definitely gone up. And also with build times, I think we all got used to, well, this is how it is. It's going to be done in 6 to 8 months. No problem. But then things outside of our control, which again, we have to take full responsibility as the builder, it just lengthened this to a time frame we could not even fathom. We could have never said in 2019, oh yeah, it's going to take 18 months to build a house. Of course, that just didn't, it seemed like that was impossible. So moving forward, what I'm seeing right now, like with our business, is just like you guys used to do, where it was kind of that starting point together. We're taking an end point with our clients now, meaning you're not getting in when the land's there and it's just starting to get built. The properties that, as you know, your client buying from us now, they're either done or within 90 days of completion. So we're not possibly stuck in some sort of weird zone of waiting for supplies, of waiting for some sort of permit or approval that could just stagnate you for months. We're keeping that risk on our plate so that by the time you guys are presenting it to your clients, again, it's either done or it's within a, you know, 2 to 3 month span of being complete and being able to, you know, go. So that's been a big change I've seen. And we're working with new prices. I mean, if you look at 2018 material prices and try to say, hey, I was getting this in 2018. Well, that's just a different world.
That's adorable.
It's very sweet. But the good news is, guys, especially when you're in an area like Florida, the inflationary effect has some bad things, but also some good things. What else has happened from the inflationary effect? Well, rents have gone up. So rents are very different. You know, if I tried to, you know, get our clients the rent we were getting in 2018 today, well, they'd come at me with, you know, pitchforks and torches, rightfully so, because why would I charge such a low rent? The inflationary effect is taking the rents up. So that's a good thing that we have to look at as well. So that helps keep the fundamentals healthy. And again, the nice thing I'm seeing about Florida is our pricing, our overall pricing in our major markets is still so much more affordable than other markets that, you know, you see as availability, especially California investors, people in Salt Lake City, Boise, Idaho. These areas are just, their numbers are so out of whack. We're still kind of an entry point. And now that we have this long build time down to a new system, I think that's the most important thing. But getting back to your question, I think that the most important thing, Zach, is how close are the properties to completion? And that's the clearest way to hedge the risk of what we all went through with delays in the COVID times. And that's why, you know, the properties you guys are working with us on right now, they're either done or just about done.
Some people have a question, and this is like, I've realized that this never goes away. This question just doesn't go away, but it's just like, oh, we're in some sort of bubble, or we're waiting for prices to drop, and, you know, it's crazy that we're, like, in my opinion, right now we're at the peak of interest rates, and the feds have already mentioned that, like, the goal, like, our inflation, yes, it's not to, you know, 2%, but it's close to it. And we've, you know, they've had some crazy rate hikes. Like, we just went through the most dramatic increase in interest rates in the shortest period of time in history. Yeah. And we're at a 25-year high for interest rates right now. And so over this next probably few months into 2024 and 2025, interest rates will probably start to settle down. I don't think dramatically. No one should be waiting thinking that rates are going to go back down to 2 or 3%.
Hold out to that 3% again.
Yeah. And if they do, guess what's going to happen to prices, right? You're better off buying now and refinancing, right? Like, don't wait, you know, never time your investing around interest rates. That's the most ridiculous way to try to build wealth ever. But like, what's your opinion on people that are questioning about bubbles, or like what's going to happen in the future? You know, I have my opinion, and I always point to supply and demand, because that's the number one driver for economics in an area. But how do you answer those questions, Tim, for someone's like, well, what's going to happen next year? Like, where are we, in a bubble, or, you know?
Here's something that a lot of the doom and gloom news doesn't talk about, and this cannot be argued. We have an inventory issue still in the U.S. We are behind on the amount of housing we need. And supply and demand, we were just talking about that before, and that's going to be different and more extreme in certain areas that are the highest growing, like Florida, which is the fastest growing state in the nation right now. If you wait and try to time, and I was just talking to my 20-year-old son who's wanting to buy his first personal property to live in. And he's like, well, Dad, should I wait until next year with the rates? The problem with trying to time the rates is when you have a supply issue, that can become such a slippery slope of speed where we've seen it before, where all of a sudden, I think rates are about to go down. Well, the limit inventory that's there starts to get eaten up so quick. That's where you see that rapid price increase again. And in areas where Florida are still affordable, I could see that happening. So I think you want to buy in front of the curve so that you're not trying to race that. When the price, you're saying, okay, our big saying is, you know, you marry the property, but you date the rate. Marry the property today, and then you're not in that struggle to get the properties that are available. Oh, they're going up, because you can get caught in that next climb. And I don't want to see that for anyone. If you can get in now and then look for the refinance strategy, that's huge. And I believe, and I could be wrong, but we'll go back and look at this. Right now, if you take advantage of inventory, then you'll be taking advantage of pricing, and then you'll be able to take advantage of refinancing next year. And the reason I'm pretty confident on refinancing next year, people like getting elected. We have an election next year. And so it's magic that it seems that anytime there's an election, you know, no matter what side it's coming from, rates seem to go down. And the Fed also, like you said, you know, it just cannot keep going up like this. They're going to have to trail downwards, and they have a history of trailing downwards. But once that trailing starts, if we're low on inventory, you're going to say, damn, I got the rate, but I'm getting caught in these bidding wars on the property. And I'm saying, get ahead of that. That's kind of what I'm saying to people.
We always look at it, and I mean, there's one or two things are going to happen. Well, one thing's for sure right now is we have inventory availability to the point, not crazy amount of it of availability, but more so than we did over the past few years. And so there's buying opportunity right now. And it's a good time. I mean, for the investor, you get some incentives, you know, and there's, I guess, attractive price points and also access to inventory where you don't have to try to reserve a property a year out. And so now is a good time where you can make a smart purchase on an investment. But one of two things is going to happen in the future. Rates are going to stay the same or go up as option one. And if that happens, well, great. You locked, you know, a lower interest rate and the property's still cash flowing now because you bought it appropriately based on fundamentals. Or the other option, more than likely, rates are going to come down. And when that happens, yes, you can refinance your property and all of a sudden increase cash flow dramatically, but you would have bought a property when you actually had inventory availability. You don't have to compete and you don't get caught in these escalating prices. You know, you're actually building equity, right? Like, that's a good thing either way. But if rates do come down and you start to get this kind of appreciation because demand picks up even more so, you know, you will be patting yourself on the back for owning property prior to that. So,
yeah. Well, and also that's the general market. I mean, the reason that we're together is because we try to solve problems that the majority of investors out there don't get. As you know, when we were like, what's the biggest issue? Biggest issues are our interest rates right now, really. They're finding programs and we're offering in-house financing. You know, we're pre-buying mortgage for your clients and we're getting it down to 4.75.
Let's talk about that. Can you go into details on that, please? And I'm glad you brought that up because I completely forgot about that, but that's something that is a huge benefit for investors right now.
Yeah, I mean, what's blocking people? It's not the fundamentals of the area or the quality of the property. It's what has happened is this interest rate has taken off, like you said, the biggest spurts upwards in several years. That's the thing that's out of whack. So we said, well, let's fix that part. And it's not cheap to fix it. We are pre-buying mortgages where we have to buy money. We're now in the business of buying money. And luckily, our balance sheet is the size that banks will look at us. We can pre-buy mortgages and then pass that cheaper rate on to our clients. You know, and right now we have a program 4.75, which is 30-year AM, 10-year fixed, you know, and that is a really solid way to get your thing going. We also have a program that's, if you say, oh, I only like 30-year fixed, great. We have a 30-year fixed that's 5.5%. So you're still looking about 2% below the market. And that's with you paying no points. If you want to pay a little bit of points, maybe a point or two, you can get down to 4.9% on a 30-year fixed. So when you're getting into the fours, a lot of people didn't believe us. They're like, and how many times you guys say, oh, I wish I had locked in 2 years ago. And they say, what are you doing? How are you doing this? It's very expensive to buy money, but we know that we are a volume builder. We're a low margin volume builder. If we can help our people get into the right rates, then they're going to build successful portfolios, buy multiple properties with us, and we'll make up for it in volume. That's why we buy mortgages, so that we can all keep growing and investing.
Yeah, and I know people might hear that, you know, 30-year amortized, 10-year fixed, and be a little concerned. But let's be honest, with what we're talking about in Florida, you're not going to be holding on to that mortgage for 10 years. I mean, you're going to be pulling cash out. You're going to be utilizing your property to do other things. You're going to be selling it potentially. There's so many things that you're going to be doing with that mortgage that the likelihood of the people buying today still having this exact same mortgage in 10 or 11 years is extremely unlikely, unless you just let your portfolio sit and never utilize it for anything. So I would not let an adjustable rate mortgage that scares some people, you know, change your mindset off of that. But one of the things I wanted to touch on was, you know, you've mentioned it several times that Florida is the fastest growing state in the country. And some of the concerns that I've seen online are people saying, well, this is just because of COVID. People are just moving there because of COVID and remote work. And one thing I want to point out to every single person here is remote work is either here or it's not. Companies have come to a decision about whether they're going to make people come into the office or not. They've either said you can work remote all the time, or you have to be here one day, 2 days, 3 days a week. However they're going to do it, their remote schedule is now set. So I want people to know people are now moving to Florida because they want to move to Florida and they're going to stay there. So have you seen any big difference in kind of the areas around there about, has it slowed down a little bit? Are you still seeing a massive increase in your markets? Kind of, what is your kind of on the ground gauge of people moving to it? Are you just seeing more and more neighbors moving in, or what are you seeing there?
It's still a monstrous amount. I think we looked up the other day, it was some stat of like almost 1,700 people a day moving here. It's just there's constant growth happening here. And the thing I want to remember, when I talked about before that the municipality of Fort Myers area released that report before COVID and they were 3 years behind expected inventory for rentals. We already had growth patterns here for baby boomers, for just people of migration patterns to the Southeast. This was well before COVID. COVID just was an extra steroid booster that hasn't changed. And the reason why it hasn't gone down is people like warm weather, people like no state income tax. So like me being an ex-Californian for years investing there, I saved 13.3% leaving there. That's a big amount of money that people look at. The affordability index is really good, and businesses want to be here for the same. It's a business friendly environment. So people want to be here. So we have not seen that slowdown at all, to be honest with you. I'm a former Jersey boy. I grew up in New Jersey. And if you guys know the jokes about the New Jersey DMV, it's true. It was the worst. You used to, when you'd get your driver's license, you'd walk in, you're like, ah, shit, I'm here the whole day. You know, you were there for hours to get a license renewal. Well, when I got down to Florida, you walk in like 15 minutes, the people are nice, you're in and out in 15 minutes. Well, I told friends about this, you know, and I had friends move down here to our area, and they called me, they're like, man, I was in the DMV for 2.5 hours. I was like, oh no, I'm so sorry. Cause it's like these little signs that I see just in general aren't going away.
And the new DMV index, that's where we have to.
Yeah. Right. That's a new one, but it is a real one that I've lived, unfortunately. So we're not seeing a slowdown, guys, and we're still behind on housing. And that's a really encouraging thing. So even without the take COVID out, the growth patterns in Florida, had COVID never happened, were just starting to really take off around that 2019 era. So that's just an extra thing that gave us attention that's still going to get us extra.
Yeah, we used to kind of track the population migration. It was really from like the Northeast to Southeast was a big part of it, as you just mentioned. But now we can trace migration from all across the country. And a large portion of it is West Coast. You know, and just, I think a lot of it has to do with nice weather, but also affordability, as you mentioned, and certainly the tax structure is beneficial. Speaking about the migration, and I know this is a wide spectrum, Jim, but a lot of people have questions about like tenant demographics. Like, are these just retirees looking into, like, can you give us an idea about what type of tenant demographics you're generally seeing?
Yeah, we'll rent to retirees, but I can tell you a lot of the retirees coming here are creating jobs that the people that these jobs are for, that's who lives in our property. Younger family, replaceable income. So do you guys have heard of replaceable income? If a senior vice president of a marketing company or a financial company loses their job, it's hard to replace that job. It's more niche. They're more elite. And that's not replaceable income. Replaceable income is someone who is, you know, in the service industry, is a nurse, is a construction worker, is, you know, like works at the port industry here in Jacksonville. Their job is easier to replace the amount of income and the position that they're in. That's who we try to rent to, because they usually make a good household income to afford one of our houses. And if they lost one of their jobs, it's been statistically proven it's easier for them to find a new job.
So you're, like we mentioned, working in a lot of different areas. You've touched on several of them. You're going to get the question that everybody always asks here. When it comes to appreciation and when it comes to cash flow, which are your current favorite markets for those? Which one are people going to get priced out the most quickly on? And which one do you see as, if you were going to hold for 4 years strictly for cash flow, would you go into right now?
Yeah, all the markets have both, you know, and again, something we didn't talk about is we have a simple menu of single family duplexes and quads. And each of them has a greater strength. And, you know, normally, historically, single family homes have some of the best appreciation when they're in a good area available, but they'll have lower cash flow than, let's say, a quad. So if you're going to buy a quad, you're going to yield a higher cash flow, but it might not appreciate in the percentages that a single family home does. And a duplex is kind of right in between. You're going to yield a higher rent yield, but you might have a little less appreciation. Although those are kind of a nice little unicorn in the middle, because if they're in single family home neighborhoods, they can do just as well. So first thing we have to look at, Adam, is the menu. You know, a quad is going to yield you a higher cash flow. I believe a single family home, for the way we're getting you into them, is going to yield you a higher equity percentage growth. And it's also a cheaper buy-in, obviously. And then there's going to be markets that are more affordable buy-ins. The more affordable buy-ins are going to start with a higher cash flow and could have less equity growth. The problem with me saying that is I've been proven wrong. Like Ocala proved me wrong. Like it outperformed Jacksonville for 2 years. But the most affordable to buy into are going to be those central markets, the Ocalas, the Citrus Springs, the Inverness, and then Jacksonville is going to kind of be at a median level. And then at our higher level, which will probably have the lower cash flow fundamentals, but the higher equity growth potential, would be like a Palm Coast and a lot of Southwest Florida. Again, Southwest Florida, Lehigh Acres, which is a little more inland, can be a little bit more like an Ocala, but because it's more inland. But again, that Fort Myers area, if you're going to be investing in the fastest growing area in the nation, it's going to be a more expensive buy-in and probably a little lower cash flow, but it has, you know, easy fundamentals to see why it might have better equity growth. So hopefully that kind of breaks it down.
Yeah. And again, going back to that, like we're talking about year one analysis when you're looking at a pro forma, I would argue that an area like Southwest Florida, even though first year, like you may not be double digit cash on cash return, but you probably will have stronger rental increase year after year, year three and four can cash flow more so than maybe one of these affordable markets. So just something to keep in mind. You always want to be forward thinking. Remember, when we look at a pro forma, that's a year one analysis. And we always need to be conscious about like, okay, what does year two, three, four look like? All the time we have newer investors that are like running numbers. And this is good. Like this is good practice what we work with people on. To look at, well, you know, this is where I anticipate my property is going to be, or, you know, in 3 or 4 years. But it's like, well, did you account for any rental increase? Did you account for, you know, and the same thing, you got to account for expense increase, which probably would be minimal. on new construction, but you need to account for appreciation and rental increases. And that's one of the things people forget about. Jim, last question I have for you is, working with a builder that is specifically in the build to rent model versus just a random, large scale builder that sells mainly retail. And what are the advantages to work with someone? All the builders in our network, which you were one of them, that you have to apply to be a part of our trusted network. You have to have a track record. We have to go through a whole vetting process. You have to, the numbers have to make sense. So we go through a long vetting process, and, we've had to fire builders, and same thing with property managers in the past. It's just, we've had to divorce them. It hasn't been nice if things change over time, if businesses change. You guys have been in business for a long time. You've always catered to investors. You built your business around that. So can you talk a little bit about why work with investors versus selling retail? And what are some of the advantages to the investor to work with a specific build to rent builder like yourself versus just going to some random large scale builder? You talked about the interest rate buy down, national builders aren't offering that, but I'd love to hear from you on that.
Yeah, and that's a great question. It is a very niche position in the market for being a build-to-rent builder. I mean, this term didn't even exist 10 years ago. And so national home builders, for example, they're not wanting to build affordable housing because they make their money in upgrades, and they want a way bigger profit margin than we do. So most of the stuff they're going to build is going to be out of that cash flow range, which starts you off on the wrong foot right away. And another thing is, national home builders, the bigger builders, they have zero interest and less than zero interest in building duplexes and quads. I mean, that's why would we ever do something like that? That makes no sense. And our job is to build a portfolio. We're not looking at one property. Our most successful investors usually own 5 to 8 properties. And when they're able to build a portfolio within the menu of single family, a duplex, quads, and they combine those together, well, this is like a well-oiled machine getting the benefits of the equity growth and cash flow growth and, using one of our loan programs to get them, if they buy a quad, 4 units with one loan. So that really helps jump that rent to retirement goal a lot cleaner. We also know the difference between what's nice and what's nice and durable. Remember, we're building these where we want these, aesthetically pleasing. So if you decide to sell 7 and 10 years down the road, you can. But we also need it durable and laid out well for the tenant, where your property is going to live the best for tenants with the least amount of wear and tear. Again, that's not really something in the mindset of a large or a custom builder. They're building something nice and they're moving on. That's been a big distinction we've seen, Zach. You go to a builder and say, build me a house that I can rent. Well, the warranties are normally different, and so is the durability. And they haven't looked at it from saying, okay, we've managed long term. What's going to make this easier to manage for us and for the landlord owner? And so the way that we approach it is completely different. And one of our most important things is, yes, it has to be nice, but we're going to go into a zone that is designed for cash flow, but also to keep you out of the trenches. I know it's controversial, but we just don't like going to those tough bottom of the barrel neighborhoods. I can build you a new house there, but I think I'd be doing you a disservice. Tried it for myself years ago. Didn't work well. I'm not going to do it for our clients.
So just to summarize what you said in bullet point format, working with a builder rent builder like yourself, you have the investor in mind and goal. So fundamentally, you're specifically building in areas where the cash flow numbers make sense. Yep. You're being conscious of that, but you're also building in areas that are growing. They have strong rental demand. So you guys are involved in the managerial aspect of it post-closing. So you have that long-term relationship and you have oversight on management, which that's something we didn't really talk about, but that is an important thing to notice. Yeah. You are volume builder aware, and because of the numbers, you're building below market prices. It's not uncommon for people to have appraisals probably that come in above the purchase price, but fundamentally, you're building a house where you can have lower margins, whereas, retail builder is going to try to, maximize their margin. People are buying emotionally, right? They're selling to the retail versus looking at the numbers. And I think so those are probably the key points that you mentioned, right, Jim? Did I miss anything?
Yeah. Oh, and just the menu. When you're building a portfolio, single family, duplexes, and quads, putting the three of them into into your strategy can be a very powerful way. We have enough case studies to show using that menu of options is very powerful. And most other builders don't even look at the duplexes or the quads, and we kind of specialize in them.
Yeah. The last thing I want to touch on is the thing that we get asked a lot about, and that is, you know, people always ask us, is there a warranty to this? And yeah. I know y'all do have a warranty on this. So can you touch a little bit about what kind of builder warranty y'all are offering and kind of what it covers?
Yeah, so we can get out more information, obviously, that you guys can share, but you have to have a state mandated 210 warranty. And a 210 warranty basically means 2 years coverage on the little stuff, 10 years coverage on the more structural stuff. And, you know, when we used to do older houses, we could just get a 1 year warranty and that was it. So now with the new construction, it does extend you into more things. So it's just to give the 20,000 foot view, 2 years is for the smaller things, 10 years for bigger structural things.
How does that come into play though? Like with, because a lot of times when we're running numbers, we're reducing the maintenance amount for new construction because of warranties in place. Mm-hmm. And it's new construction. But like, you know, if, does that mean that the 2 year warranty covers like general maintenance stuff, or can we clarify what it covers and what it doesn't cover?
It's not going to cover a tenant issue. If a tenant does something, that's obviously the warranty doesn't kick in. So the good thing is, sometimes when you would build a property that a warranty and then the manager is completely separate, how do you, you know, it's like one hand doesn't talk to the other. Obviously, our building department finishes a home and brings it right over to the property management department. They have the warranty on file. So they have to look up to see the things that it is. One of the things it is not, Zach, is if a tenant flushes a toy down the toilet, you know, the classic joke one. Obviously, the warranty wouldn't cover that. But what does cover that is we get the toy out of the toilet and then we charge back the tenant. But so I don't know if that makes sense, but it's not going to cover tenant damage or tenant neglect if that was to happen. It's going to cover more the build out of things that we have been responsible for.
So if there's functionality things, like if the house, like, you know, there's a warranty with that, you know, if the something with the windows not operating or the electrical system or something like that, like that's all warranted.
Yeah. I remember one time in Palm Coast, 2-3 years ago, we actually had a roofer that put on a roof wrong. And so when it came out and there was problems with it, we're going, what the heck? It's 14 months old. This isn't making any sense. We went out and placed the roof completely. I mean, these things can happen, but this is why we have warranties. This is why we have inspections up front. And that's why you want that. You always, no matter who you work with, you want to make sure your property manager understands your warranty, if that makes sense. And since our builder is related to our property manager, that's a very fluid communication.
Fantastic. Well, Jim, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it. And I know Zach and I personally invested in Florida, love the state. A lot of our investors investing in Florida are going to love the state once they close on their properties. The one who have, you know, already do love it. So really appreciate you coming and talk to us about these properties. You can find all of those properties at renttoretirement.com. That's renttoretirement.com. Just head over to our inventory page and you'll see all the properties we have listed right there. Jim, again, thank you so much for educating us about this today. Don't forget, if you have an interest in Zach's report of the top 20 markets to invest in, email podcast@renttoretirement.com. That's podcast@renttoretirement.com. Really appreciate the time you spent educating yourself today, and we'll talk to you on the next episode.